Welcome to the Tiny Morbid Fantasies podcast with your host, Andrea and Sophia.
This is a podcast of short stories based on our everyday tiny morbid thoughts.
Welcome to episode 3. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Andrea.
And we have a few stories to share with you this week. Andrea's up first with her story.
Yep, so this is going to be part 2 of the story, The Long Drive Home. So if you didn't listen to episode 2, I would suggest listening because this is a continuation. So the next part of The Long Drive Home, it's titled Lost in the Woods.
Ooh, we're going to revisit Paul.
Yes, Paul's gone through some things. All right, so this is part 2, Lost in the Woods. Paul wasn't sure if it was the exhaust fumes or the hit to the head, but he passed out at some point during the ride. He was awakened by the wobbling of the wheelbarrow as it gently bounced along the stony path. He kept motionless and pretended to be knocked out as he tried to gather his bearings. His eyes, adjusting to the darkness, could see trees lining both sides of the pathway and the silhouette of one man walking ahead. Counting whoever is pushing the wheelbarrow, there's at least 2 men. There's no way he would be able to fight them both. He has no weapons and no idea where he is. They approach a clearing where Paul sees 3 more men sitting around a bonfire. He closes his eyes, hoping they didn't notice he was awake. The laughter-filled conversation halts as they walk by. "Took you long enough," said one of the men sitting around the fire. There was an angry grumble in response as they kept moving. The smell of something foul suddenly filled the air. It was like a mixture of moonshine and decay. As the voices from around the fire fade into the background, Paul risks another glance to check things out. He could see a huge brick oven beside a barn. A slender, grizzled-haired older woman stands hunched over, poking logs with a pitchfork. It sends embers into the air. He closes his eyes again as they approach. "Ma, we got another one," shouts the man pushing the wheelbarrow, his voice dripping with childlike excitement. "Good job, boys." Ma walked over to inspect their catch. "Looks like he'll have some good meat." She lifts his arm to get a better look at his midsection. "Take him into the barn so Sister can get him cleaned up, then we'll put him in the tub to marinate." Inside the barn, Sister is shoveling entrails from a pile into a bucket. The boys walked in and dumped Paul's body near a large metal butcher's table. Paul did his best to be a convincing corpse. "Leave the wheelbarrow," Sister says. "I need to take these scraps to the pigs before getting that new one ready." Sister began to hum a happy tune as she went back to shoveling. Paul took another glance. Luckily, her back was towards him, so he took the opportunity to take in his surroundings. He could make out the flames between the cracks of the door he was pushed through. There were several small square windows he would never get his broad shoulders through. Lastly, as he peered under the legs of the table, there was a door at the other end of the barn. He wasn't sure what was through it, but this was his best and only option. The shoveling stopped, and he went back to being a corpse. Sister took the loaded wheelbarrow out the back door. The sounds of the pigs could be heard excitedly oinking for dinner. Once the door closed, he searched the barn for anything useful. The only thing he could find was the shovel used for the entrails. He took a firm grip, though his hands were shaking, and waited behind the door. As Sister returned, he cracked the back of her head, leaving a softball-sized crater. It was his life or hers, so it had to be done, he thought to himself. He grabbed her by the ankles and dragged her into one of the horse stalls. He checked her pockets. She had a small blade with a curved tip and a small flashlight. It wasn't much, but he took it. Hastily, he covered her body with a blood-stained piece of cloth that was hanging nearby. Peeking out the back door, he saw an animal pen with 6 large pigs on the left, and to the right, a small shack, and straight ahead, the woods. Quickly, he ran towards the woods and disappeared into the tree line. Join us in episode 4 for the conclusion of The Long Drive Home.
Oh, Paul.
Yeah. Would you like to know a tiny morbid fact?
Yes.
It would take 6 pigs to eat an average-sized man.
When did you research this?
I Googled it because I wanted to have the proper number of pigs in the pen. So
that's
my search
intense.
My search history is questionable, but I found, I think it was on Quora. Someone did the math. They were like, well, if the pig is this size, it's going to eat 20 pounds of food in a day, so you need 6, or it was more than 20.
Oh, we're assuming it's getting done in a day. They want this quick.
Yeah, so it was an average size man of 150 pounds to 165. It would take approximately 6 full-size pigs at about 400 pounds each.
I'd imagine their farm would be a little bit bigger than that, but those are like their prized six man-eating pigs.
Exactly. So that was my tiny morbid fact.
That was really cute.
That I had to Google and make my search history look all shady.
Mm.
So now we're going to do...
Snowden.
We're going to do Snowden, your story.
It is the end of March right now as we're recording. I realize that spring is coming up right now, but I just wanted to see this one through since I had started writing it. So hopefully spring and summer will change into more warmth and less snow-related stories. But yeah, here's Snowden. It had been snowing for hours. The town had shut down hours ago in anticipation of the weather conditions. The snow started coming down slowly at first, but by now it was getting harder to see through the screen of white. The winter had been so mild before this, but the temperatures had plummeted to severe lows over the past few days. This particular cold snap set new lows for this time of year. The rains from previous days made walkways icy before the snow even started. Curling up in a warm blanket was easy on a day like this. There wasn't much that needed to be done other than taking the dog for a walk. He had been out hours ago, but started his usual ritual of letting me know it was time. He starts with an unblinking stare that can last up to an hour. Then he makes a move to be closer to me, still staring intently. The final touch is the short, low bark he makes. Wesley has always been a quiet dog, but once his walk ritual starts, he usually gets faster and louder over time until I have no choice but to pay attention to him. He's like a bad drumbeat, picking up a steady tempo. I guess it's time. The weather will only get worse from here on out, every minute worse than the next. Why not now? Ugh. Getting up is hard when it's so cold. I built a nest for myself with blankets and pillows from the couch. Throwing them off of my legs gave me a chill and made me long for the warmth I had just moments before. I look over to my Wes, and his sad face makes me feel for the guy. He depends on me to relieve himself. The least I could do was put on my winter clothes and take a few minutes in the cold for him. I grab my wool socks, my thickest boots, and my heavy jacket, and start putting everything on. He waits for me in the blanket, staring, and anxiously, ever so slightly, wagging his tail. "Almost ready," I say to him. I pick up his leash and a dog bag and head toward the door. As soon as I hit the threshold, I could feel the cold. The bitter chill is still unbearable under my layers. When I open the door, I could feel a gust of cold, snowy wind on my cheeks. After bounding toward me, Wes plops into the tall bank of snow, his white coat acting like a fluffy camouflage. I didn't even have a chance to put on his leash yet. I must have lost track of the time between the last time I looked outside and now. It feels like it wasn't this dense with snow when I peeked out earlier. How long ago was that? Must be at least 2 feet of snow now. It's not quite up to half of my door, but it accumulated so fast. After a heavy sigh, I trudge into the white-coated tundra, Wesley bounding like a bunny next to me. I didn't bother to put his leash on. We were the only ones stupid enough to be out here anyway. My hands are starting to freeze. I could kick myself for not replacing the pair of gloves I lost earlier this winter. Oh well, we're only going to be out here a little longer. It looks so eerie out here. Aside from the dense and blurry white snow, you could only see the soft yellow glow of the house lights in the dark. There weren't any animal prints or sign that anything had even been out here in hours. The snow was untouched except for my footsteps and Wesley's bunny hops. I used my feet and cleared an area for him to sniff around. He's very particular about his bathroom spots. It takes a few minutes of circling, but he finally goes. I pick it up with my bag, and it's the only warmth I've felt since coming out here. We turn around to walk back home, and Wesley slips a little on some ice beneath my footsteps. I hadn't noticed it before, but the snow was falling on a layer of ice from yesterday's rains. We weren't prepared for the temperature drop, but at least the snow was pretty. Finally, we could see the door to the house again. Wesley had a little more energy than I did after trudging through that snow and ran to wait for me at the door. My hands are so stiff from the cold at this point that it was hard to grab the keys. It took a minute, but I got the key in the lock and turned the knob. The warm air was a nice relief when the door opened. Wesley ran inside and up the stairs, and I locked the door and put my keys on the hook. I took a step inside, but something was snagging behind me. I was still holding the leash. I was so numb that I completely forgot. It must be caught on a bush or something. I turn around to figure out how it's stuck and have to take a step back outside. I hold the door open a crack as I figure it out, completely forgetting about the ice we uncovered on our walk. I slip on a piece of ice right outside my doorway and land hard on my butt. I felt worse pain. At least I was numb. The leash was caught on a twig after all. When I reached for it, I heard a click and rip around to see that my door was shut. The exhaustion from walking around in the snow has caught up with me, and I barely have any energy left. I get to the door and fumble around in my pockets for the keys. Where are the keys? A mild panic sets in as I search the same pockets over and over, look around the ground by my door, but there's nothing. Oh no. I put them on the hook. Why did I put them on the hook? I'm locked out. My pockets are empty except for a random receipt and a tube of chapstick. I didn't even bring my phone with me. How stupid. The closest house is at least a mile away. The only thing I can do now is to check all the windows to see if I left one unlocked. No luck. My hands are going red from the cold and I can barely feel them, let alone move them. My boots are meant to be waterproof and rugged in the cold, but it hasn't stopped my feet from feeling cold and weighing me down like blocks of ice. I'm losing energy fast, and there's nowhere for me to go. Hopefully the plow trucks will be out in the morning. If I can just keep myself warm and visible, I might be able to get some help. The best spot for visibility is in front of my door. When I get back to that point, the place where I know is safe, but the place that keeps me out, I can hear Wes whining from inside. He was fed earlier in the night, so I know he'll be fine until morning. The threshold is a good place to sit and wait, so I slump down and rest my head against the door. Sleep is creeping in, and at this point I don't feel cold anymore. My body is shaking a bit, which is somehow keeping me warm. The snow keeps falling and piling on my lap like a fluffy down blanket. I fall asleep listening to Wesley's soft whining, reassuring me that I'm not alone.
So that was Snowed In. I like it.
Thank you.
I wasn't sure where it was gone. I was like, there's a ghost dog on the leash.
Well,
I don't know why I always guess, like, the dog really didn't run inside. I don't know.
No, it hella ran inside. Oh. It really did run inside. I promise. Yeah. It was a real dog.
Yeah, but then I thought, I was like, you wouldn't kill a dog.
No. Plus, I was picturing it as, like, a little dog, because I have a little dog. So it couldn't, like, its actions I'm very aware of. So my dog, like, flops into the snow and does his own bunny hops because he's a short little corgi. And then I was trying to figure out a name. So when I came across, like, a dog breed that's kind of small, I was like, oh, Westie. Wesley the Westie. So it kind of stuck. So
yeah. Why didn't you just use... Would it have been too real to use your own dog's name?
It was really real because okay. This came to me in, like, a weird paranoia during our last snowstorm.
Okay.
And I just... It was so real in that moment that I was picturing all this that I really didn't want to go there again.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Don't want to put yourself into the story where you're killing the main character.
Oh, no, because this is definitely me. I mean, most of my stories are me, obviously. Like, my point of view and my narration is from the first-person point of view.
But yeah, that's your writing style. That's why I like your stories. They're from your point of view. I don't think I've ever put myself in one of my stories.
Really?
Yeah, no. I don't do that. It's always just some random person or character
really cool.
That I've created. I'm not Paul. I would never stop on the side of the road.
Maybe
I think we've been through this.
I think maybe that's a difference because your mind is more creative and you have these scenarios that come up as like a different person. You're able to kind of like see it run through like that. But for me, this is like, I guess it's my fears and anxieties that I'm writing from because I'll be upfront about that. Like most of these are just... These are spurred from my own anxieties. And then I had this come to me one time and I was like, no, I'm legitimately afraid that my fingers are going to lock up. I need to buy gloves.
But yeah, yours are more realistic. Not that mine aren't realistic, but yours are more real. Maybe there's cannibals in the woods. Maybe. But yours is like, yes, you can get locked out of your house and freeze to death.
That is a
very real thing that is more likely to happen than getting kidnapped by cannibals.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was initially going to write, I live in an apartment, and so this is from the perspective of living in an apartment, but I was like, well, if you live in an apartment, you can't just, like, die on your doorstep. You have neighbors that you can call. I was like, no, she needs to be isolated.
Right.
Because you can't just, like, die right there. Your fight or flight would make you knock on a neighbor's door. I would assume, but...
Very true.
Yeah. So this person lived alone, I guess, in a house in the middle of nowhere.
All right. Awesome. So I think this is the part where we tell people how they can contact us, because we would like to hear their thoughts and opinions.
Yes, please.
And let's see, we're on Twitter at Tiny Morbid.
Instagram at Tiny Morbid Fantasies.
Or if you need more space to tell us what you think, you can email us at tinymorbidfantasies@gmail.com.
And we're also on Reddit. Our handle is tinymorbidfantasies.
Yes, so we definitely would like to hear from you, hear what you think. I always accept creative criticism.
And your own anxieties. If you have something similar to mine, if you're like me at all and have these random thoughts that pass through your mind, please send it along to us. We'd love to hear it.
Or if you believe in cannibals in the woods, you know, send that along too.
It's always possible. Cue the banjo.
That'll be our outro. Banjo music. I'm going to find banjo music. So, stay safe and, we'll see you next time. Nope, we won't, because we can't fucking see you.